Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, the very first Italian-American podcast and the home of the Italian-American moment. I'm Frankie D, your very proud host, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, and your podcast app. Please like us and follow us on all the social media outlets. Today, my guest is Bob Masullo, a retired newspaper reporter and editor who spent the bulk of his career with the Sacramento Bee. He was a co-founder of the Italian Cultural Society of Sacramento. Bob, welcome to the show.
Mille grazie, Frank.
It's a pleasure to have you. And we did an interview. I had the pleasure of interviewing you. One of my first interviews on the podcast. And you were just full of knowledge about the tremendous AP Giannini from the Bank of America. So thank you for joining me again today, many, many years later. And
how
we
long ago was that, Frank?
What's that?
How long ago was that?
I didn't look it up, but I am going to guess and say that it was probably 9 years ago.
Wow. And you don't look a day older.
Right. My voice. Yes, exactly. And my voice hasn't even aged. So we're going to talk about, or you're going to tell us a lot about three just tremendously talented Italians that ended up in California and really left their mark on the state of California. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit about your Italian family background.
Okay. Well, I'm third generation on both sides. My father's family was from Cava dei Terreni, which is a little bit south of Naples, a little bit north of Salerno. My mother's family was from Campobasso, which is in the Molise region, also not too far from Naples. All four of my grandparents were born in Italy. They came to America the ending of the 19th century and the early part of the 20th century. And all of them stayed in New York. However, I do remember my father telling me that his father, my grandfather, who I never knew because he died before I was born, when he got to New York, he read about or heard about the wine industry in California, and he knew about winemaking, and he wanted to go to California. But my grandmother said, no, we travel from Italy, that's enough. I'm not going any further. And so they stayed in New York. But I always had the dream of coming out west, and when I got old enough, I did.
So you were born and raised and lived a big part of your life in New York, in the Bronx specifically?
Until I was 25, yes. The first 3 years of my life was in famous Little Italy, the Arthur Avenue section. It still is a great Italian section today. I lived there for 3 years, but then my family moved up a little bit. They moved about 5 miles away to a development that the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company had built called Parkchester, which was like a city within a city. It had many buildings and a very diverse, but all Caucasian, number of people living there. I think there was something like 50,000 people living in Parkchester. So it was a real big community, but there I was not among all Italians. There were a lot of Italians, but there were also a lot of Irish and a lot of Jewish people and a sprinkling of everything else. But I would say growing up, most of my influences was between the Irish and the Jews.
And is it true that when you retired from work, did you spend a year in Italy?
I did indeed.
And where did you go?
That was one of the great experiences of my life. Maybe next to getting married and having children, that was the greatest experience. We My wife and I had gone to Italy several times, and a year before we did retire, which was in 2005, we went to Italy for a 2-week vacation, scouting out possible places that we would stay for a whole year. And we settled on a place in northern Italy, a little village called Soiano del Lago, Soiano on the lake, lake being Lake Garda, the biggest lake in Italy. And it's near Brescia and Verona. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. We rented a car for the whole year and drove all around Italy and all around Western Europe, really. We went just about everywhere, but kept Northern Italy as our base.
And that is in what region? I'm drawing a blank.
It's in Lombardia.
Oh, Lombardia. Okay. Wow, that's amazing. I have to be honest. That's incredible.
You know, it's just south of the Austrian border. You heard about Hannibal crossing the Alps with the elephants.
Yes.
On the Brenner Trail. Well, the Brenner Trail ran from Innsbruck, Austria in the north to Verona, Italy in the south. And we were close to that. We could drive up into the Tyrolean section of Italy, which is part of Italy that used to be part of Austria, but the Italians got it in World War I. And so the people there are German speaking, even though they're Italian citizens. It was an interesting mix because where we were in the fully Italian section, but a lot of the German tourists would come there. In the restaurants, they'd always give you a menu either in German or in Italian. And I remember this one time, we went to, of all things, a Chinese restaurant in Italy. And the Chinese host greeted my wife in Italian, and she didn't understand him. So then he switched to German. She still didn't understand him. And then he switched to English. And a moment later, he said something to one of the waiters in Chinese. So within about 30 seconds, we knew this guy spoke at least 4 languages.
Very, very good. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a wonderful experience. And we had a nice apartment with 2 bedrooms. We knew about this apartment before we even left the United States. I remember telling almost everybody, all my friends, relatives, oh, we've got this apartment with an extra bedroom. So if you want to come and visit us, do it. And I figured no, maybe 1 or 2 would do it, but not many others. Was I wrong? In the course of a year, 40 people came to visit us.
40 people?
Not all at once, you know, oh. But like each week, 2 or 3 would arrive. And we were in near Brescia, as I said, and the airport is in Milan, which is about 80, 90 miles apart. So it was a long trip each time to go pick up these people and take them back to our apartment.
Well, if you go another time, don't tell anybody this way.
Yeah, you know, tell them after you get back.
Exactly, exactly. But that's a hell of an experience and good for you. And that's an inspiration to a lot of people because I think a lot of us, we dream about it, we think about it, but we never actually do it. And
you
the
know,
fact that you
I
did
have
it.
To tell you a little bit more on it. We, years before that, we had an exchange student from Italy stay with us for a while. And we, through him, we got to know his family and became friends with his extended family. And so he lived in Brescia and he knew that we were coming. He was able to get everything set up for us. He found the apartment. He got the telephone connected, got the internet connected for us. So it made it very smooth. So if you know somebody there that can do a little bit of that groundwork, it makes it very simple.
It's always good to have friends, correct?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Okay. Okay. So we are going to touch on, you have written an article about this, and it's about three individuals, three gentlemen, Beniamino Bufano, Baldassare Forestiere, Sabato Rodia. Basically, just unbelievably talented men. And I'm going to turn it over to you. Who would you like to start with?
Well, let's say a little something about all three of them. They all lived at more or less the same time, which was the late part of the 19th century and up to the middle of the 20th century. And they were all from southern Italy, all from various parts of the Mezzogiorno. They had no knowledge of one another. And they, in California, they lived in three different parts of the state. Beniamino Bufano was in San Francisco, which is in the north. Baldassare Forestieri was in Fresno, which is in the middle, almost the dead middle of the state. And Sabato Rodia was in Los Angeles in the south. So each one was about 200 miles from the other one. Hence, they never got to know one another. Beniamino Bufano, he lived from 1890 to 1970, more or less. They're not sure of his birth date, but it's approximately that. What can I tell you about him? His friends called him Benny, and he was the only one of these three artists who formally studied art. And he was born in San Fele, a little farming hamlet in Sicily, not in Sicily, excuse me, in Basilicata. And he came to New York as a child in 1902, and there he studied art. And when he was a teenager, he moved to San Francisco. And in San Francisco, he became a sculptor, mainly a sculptor. He worked in other forms of art, but sculpting was his main art. And he created literally thousands of monumental sculptures. Many people consider him one of the greatest sculptors of the 20th century, and not just Italians, but of all sculptors. And the majority of his works are in San Francisco or the suburbs of San Francisco. There are a few scattered elsewhere. I think there's one in Chicago in the art museum.
Are most of his works inside museums? Are some located outside?
No, he believed in doing art for the masses. And almost all of his stuff is outdoors, in parks, in housing projects, at universities, but always outside. And his works were noted for several things. The mediums that he worked in were mainly ceramic, stone, and stainless steel. And the sculpting has usually a rounded shape, very smooth, and the majority of the subjects are either saints, animals, or what else? Something else. Saints or animals or historic figures. And like I say, they're all over San Francisco and the suburbs of San Francisco. So if you ever get to the city of San Francisco, look these up online first and they'll tell you where to go. I can't tell you offhand where to go because there's so many, you know, there's scattered all over a very big area, but they're worth pursuing because they look beautiful. They're Italian-American masterpieces.
Is there any type of marker for this gentleman, or, you know, something that says, you know, he did this and he was...
There, I think, have been one or two biographies written about him. They were written quite a while ago, though. Somebody should do a more recent one, but
Anything at the location of these different works of art?
well, there's one at Fisherman's Wharf, with famous area in San Francisco.
Would it
It's
say his
the
name on?
statue of Saint Francis. I think he had to put his name on most of them, but even if he doesn't have his name on it, his art was so distinct. If you saw it, you'd
Knew
recognize
it.
it.
Yes.
Oh, and for people who are not going to San Francisco but want to see this, there's tons of pictures of this online. Just put in his name, Benny Bufano, Bufano, and you can find all sorts of things. Also, there's many YouTube videos about his work, so that's a good way to see it, without even traveling.
For sure, yes.
Also, a curious thing about Bufano, he was a quirky kind of guy, and he was a noted pacifist, and he had no reluctance to express his views. When w World War I started, he had an accident in his art studio, and he cut off his index finger accidentally, and it was at the time that the war started and that the United States had gotten involved in it. He took his finger and mailed it to the White House with a note to President Woodrow Wilson, and he said, "This is my trigger finger," and he says, "I don't want it being used for fighting a war, and I don't like the United States being involved in this war."
Wow, I
And
wonder
that
if
was
he
the
had a
kind of guy
response
he
to
was.
that. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. Should we go on to our next?
Okay, the next guy, going 200 miles south of San Francisco, to the center of the state, the agricultural area, which is known as the Central Valley in California. There's this man named Baldassare Forestieri. And Baldassare was known by the American nickname Baldy. He wasn't bald, but Americans couldn't say Baldassare, so they called him Baldy. And anyway, he came to the United States when he was 21, and he was from another agricultural village, a place called Filare in Sicily, which is near Messina, the northeast coast of Sicily. And he came to the United States when he was 21, first to New York. And when he got to New York, this would have been, I guess, right about ni 1900, 1901. And New York was just building its subway system. And he worked underground for several years, helping to build the New York subway system. Few years later, he decided he had enough of the eastern winters, and he moved to California. And he settled in Fresno. I'm not sure why, because it's not a big popular destination, but it is an agricultural center. It's noted for fruits and vegetables, and some of the wine industry is there. A lot of citrus is grown there too, oranges and lemons and things like that. And he thought he would grow citrus trees. His father was a farmer in Sicily. He didn't get along very well with his father. I think that's why he left Sicily. But he had this feeling that he wanted to outdo his father. And he buys this land on the periphery of Fresno, with the plan to plant orange trees or lemon trees, and that would be his source of income. What he didn't know was that not all of California's land is fertile. He bought a portion of land that was known as hardpan. It was almost like a rock. You couldn't grow anything on it. About the only thing you'd see growing there were tumbleweeds that grew elsewhere and blew over it. It was impossible to grow trees there, especially citrus trees.
And he grew,
And he
and
had
this
this
was
land. And
a ton of acres, correct, Bob? He bought a huge
I,
piece of land.
well, I read in several places different numbers, so I'm reluctant to say a number. I have seen as little as 70 acres and as many as 700 acres. At any rate, it was a sizable piece of land. And he decided since he couldn't grow the citrus trees there, he'd build a spa that people could come to. Problem with that, though, is that Fresno, being in the middle of the valley, which is low level, it gets tremendous heat in the summer, many days over 100 degrees. And at that time, this is the early 1900s, there was no air conditioning. So a spa was would not be a big money maker. But he had this idea, why not build it underground? And underground, it would be 15 to 20 degrees cooler automatically. He had worked on the subways in New York, and he had seen all of those grottos in Italy, so he knew about underground work, and he decided he would build this spa by digging this hard pan and planting things that, like he did plant trees underground where the soil was better, and have like a hole in the top so that it would get sunlight and rainwater. And he built rooms and with the he put in fireplaces and kitchens and a ballroom. Anyway, he kept doing this for many years. Let's see, he did it for over 40 years. And he dreamed of opening it in his later years, but unfortunately, he I had a heart attack, I believe, and died at 67 before he had finished the work. But by that time, this was in 1946 that he had that he died. He completed 90 rooms, courtyards, and passage halls. And today, these facilities are still there. They're owned by the Forestieri family, the extended family, still today. They're open to the public. You do have to phone ahead and make an appointment for a visit because they just take small groups through it when you go. But it is an amazing thing to see.
Okay,
And
this is just like it blows my mind. So he kind of built
again, I
like a
would recommend
hotel.
going online to see pictures of this. Just put in the Forestieri Underground Gardens or the Fresno Underground Gardens, and you'll find. Also, there are nice videos on YouTube, so those are worthwhile checking out.
So Bob, so was this kind of like, for lack of a better description, like he built a hotel type of environment
That
under
was
the
his
ground?
intention. He never saw it to fruition, but that was his intent, yes.
Okay, so did he have, I mean, this is amazing. And like, I would think like you needed engineers and, architects and.
That is something that he has in common with the next person we're going to talk about, Sabato Rodia. Forestieri did this work single-handedly, with very basic tools, a pick and an axe and a shovel. No high-powered equipment or anything. He just did it working day after day after day.
Wow. So this one man was equal to a construction team and a team of engineers by himself.
Yes, and yeah, I think it was mainly his experience working on the subway system in New York that gave him the know-how how to do this.
Because odds are he had very little education. He was not trained in this.
I
He
don't think
just
so. Yeah,
had life experience.
of the three artists that we're discussing, the only one was Bufano. He did have formal art training, but Forestieri and Rodia, no, they were just self-made men.
Wow.
Okay, so let's talk about Rhodia.
Let's talk about Rhodia, please.
Salvador Rhodia, who's commonly known by Americans as either Sam Rhodia or Simon Rhodia, but his real name was Sabato. He was born February 12th, 1879, same year as Forrest Derry. And he was born in a little town called Cerino near Naples. And he came to America when he was 15, and he kind of roamed around the country. He lived in Pennsylvania, in Washington State, in Texas, and in Northern California before he moved to Southern California, where he built his masterpiece, which is the Watts Towers, which are the Watts Towers. They're in the Watts section of Los Angeles. When he got there, he said he wanted to do something big, and he did. And these towers, which he built single-handedly, again, single-handedly, just like Forrest Derry, took him 33 years, working day after day, never taking any time off, and doing this after a full-time day job. He was a stone mason. He worked 8 hours a day, and then he'd come and work on the towers that he was building that he said was influenced by Galileo and the Leaning Tower of Pisa. He said, if Galileo could do that, he's going to do something even better. And he spent 33 years working on these towers, and he built in all 17 of them. And the tallest one is the equivalent of a 10-story building. And he built these. Let me talk about how they were built with steel rebar and a mixture of concrete and wire mesh, which he worked on by hand, twisting these things and building it up and up. And as the towers went higher and higher, he was climbing up with no protection whatsoever, not even a safety belt. And he's 10 stories up at one point. There's photographs of him and videos of him doing this. So there's no doubt about him actually doing this. He decorated the towers with scraps of things that he found in junkyards and along railroad tracks, broken bottles, broken cups, and all odds and ends that he pasted in a very artistic way. And you really have to see the pictures of this to appreciate them. And he worked on that for 33 years. And then when he was done, he had a little accident. He didn't feel he could work it in the high spaces any longer. He gave the towers to his neighbor. He didn't ask any questions, no charge. And he moved to Martinez, which is an area near San Francisco, 200 miles away, 400 miles away, to live near some relatives. And they took care of him for the rest of his life. But in the meantime, artists and art critics and builders were amazed by these towers. And they begged him to come back to Los Angeles to, you know, talk about them. He refused to do that. He died in Martinez, California.
I did see a
today,
video.
Yeah. Today, these towers are a state park. It's called the Simon Rhodia State Historical Park. And you can see them. It's free of charge, you know, because they're out in the open and they're so high. You can walk around it. But if you want a tour, you have to go inside a gate area. And I think there is a small charge for that. But, you know, give an example about how great these are. Two things. In the 1950s, the city of Los Angeles felt these towers were not properly licensed. He never got a permit to build them, and they were in the wrong place, and they wanted to tear them down. And they said, their excuse was they were dangerous, that they were going to fall over. And Rhodia said, no, they're really strong. They sent a crane with a truck, a big truck, and they hooked it to the tower. It was supposed to pull one of the tower loose. What it did was it pulled the crane off the ground. Pulled the crane off the ground, and the towers are still there. They're still secure. Another thing was there was this famous architect, Buckminster Fuller. Did you ever hear of him?
No,
I think he was in Chicago, lived in Chicago. Anyway, he said Rodia, this is a direct quote, he ranks with the greatest builders and sculptors of all history. That's not faint praise.
Amazing. I mean, truly amazing. And
yeah, so all three of these things are open to anybody who comes in California. Like I said, there is a charge only for the underground gardens. There is a small token charge for the if you want to go inside the gate at the Watts Towers. But otherwise, everything is open to the public and free of charge.
You had written an article about these three, is that correct?
It ran in your Chicago magazine, Fra Noi. Yeah, I think about a little more than a year ago.
It was called Cal Italians?
Calitals.
Okay, Calitals. So, I mean, are you the only one that basically put these three together to say?
I had seen other people that linked Forestieri and Rodia, but I think I'm the only one that added Bufano to the group. I did that for two reasons. I like the idea of them balancing out the state, you know, that one is from Northern California, one is from Central California, and one Southern California. And also that they were all from the Mezzogiorno, which is kind of unusual, although California has one of the largest number of Italian Americans of any state. They're scattered all over the state. There's not big concentrations like you have in the East Coast or in Chicago, or used to have. I mean, even in the East Coast and in Chicago, the Italians have scattered all over the place, right?
For sure, yes. But no, it's amazing that they all lived their lives about the same years. Like you said, they're all from, one's from Basilicata, one's from Sicily, one's from Campania. They all ended up in California, and they all died in California. And just, I mean, amazing talent and hard work. You combine both those traits.
Yes, yes.
I know Rodia did all this with, like you said, he had no scaffolding, he had no ladders, he had no power tools. He literally had five little things like a pick and a shovel and a bucket, and just the strongest will you could ever find. I mean, just
a strong body too, you
and
know?
A strong body, yeah.
Physically keep doing something like that is amazing.
And Rodia was only like 5'2", correct?
Something like that, yeah. Go look at the videos on YouTube. You'll see him, and they even have a little bit of him talking. He speaks with a real heavy, thick Italian accent. He reminded me of my grandfather.
Well, I hope someday. I mean, my advice to all of our Italian Americans: look these three gentlemen up. I would hope someday to be able to go there. I would love to visit these different works of art and all the underground gardens. I would love to do that. Thank you so much for the information about all three of them. And I'll be honest with you, Rodia, I became aware of in the last 6 months, 8 months, never heard of Watts Towers. The other two, I never heard of. So I'm just so happy to learn about these three. So I really appreciate you sharing the time with us.
There are books about all three of them. And like I said, there are many websites on all three of them. You can find tons of information on the websites. And the videos are terrific, especially the ones about the Watts Towers. I recommend them highly to anybody. I had looked at them when, well, I had actually gone to all three of these places, but I had looked at the videos a year or so ago when I wrote the article for Phra Nui. But to refresh my memory, I wanted to see those pictures again. And now, when you told me you wanted to interview me for this, I looked at them all over again, and I got a new appreciation and a new sense of pride from seeing them a second time. And if I'm able, I will go back and visit them again.
Well, just three more amazing Italians.
We have no shortage of them, Frank. We have many great Italians, and you're one of them.
No, thank you for that, but I'm far from that, but thank you. No, so this was excellent, Bob. I appreciate it so much. You shared your knowledge. You have the
Yeah,
knowledge
you know,
to share with us.
since you started your podcast, there's been several others that have started podcasts. There's the Italian American podcast, and there's one out of Pittsburgh called the Italian Radio Program, but it's really a podcast. And they're all very good. And I think we're finally reaching out to the wide world with our story, which is very important, especially for the younger people who have less connection than we did. I mean, like, you grew up with Italian references all around you, so did I. The younger people are not.
For sure.
But
And that's why.
if they want to get involved, the stuff is there, and the stuff will be there if we keep telling our story.
Yes, that's ex like you said earlier, it's extremely important to tell that story and to keep this knowledge available to them, and hope that they start to get it, start to realize of what they come from. So Bob, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I really appreciate your time and your knowledge, and all the best to you.
Thank you, Frank. Same to you. And I'd be glad to do any future thing that you have in mind if I'm knowledgeable about it.
I will definitely take you up on that for sure. Thank you so
Okay.
much.
How's the weather in Chicago? It looks pretty sunny.
The weather is not bad. It's actually a 75 degree day in the summer, so low humidity, so it's one of the better summer days.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yes. Well,
Um,
Bob,
yeah.
thank you so much, and you have a wonderful day, okay?
So long. Arrivederci.
Arrivederci.
Prossima volta.
La prossima volta, sì.